For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
So you sit here and you try to get yourself into the groove, watching the movie A Christmas Story hundreds of times,
right?
Going through every recorded DVD of the Nutcracker ever made.
Right.
Trying to get myself into the spirit. It's very, very, very difficult to do. But you had, let's start here.
Oh, yeah.
A congressman in New Jersey.
Yeah. Jack Chitterelli.
Talking about this. I'm going to leave it to you to read this now. We're talking about parodies now. There are many, many very popular parodies of Christmas carols. And this one's cute. And this is done by a New Jersey political figure.
Yep, Jack Chitterelli, he is a Republican candidate for governor for next year, so he's taken every shot possible on his emails and his social platforms. So here's what they're running, the Chitterelli campaign, running the 12 days of Christmas here in New Jersey. So they're on the ninth day right now, and this is what King Murphy brings to us. On the ninth day of Christmas, King Murphy brings to us 9 votes by mail ballot, 8 police are sharing, 8 police are shaming, 6 more families leaving, 5 felons walking free, 4 billion borrowed, 3 bloated budgets, 2 credit downgrades, and 1 and done in 2021.
Is that the election? It's next year.
Next year.
It's coming here. 2021, the governor has to stand for re-election.
Yes, indeed. And lots going to go on this next year. And, you know, talk about the election while we're talking about Murphy for a second. You know, congratulations to Governor Murphy for standing up to the multi-state initiative to put a new environmental regulations in place, which would add 17 cents a gallon increase to our gas. The governor vetoed that, so we're not going to be part of that. So thank goodness. Now, the 17 cents per gallon is not going to be added to our cost. But there again, you got to ask yourself, did he do it because he wanted to or because he's up for election next year? You got to ask yourself.
I thought that there was a move now in New Jersey to add the gas tax here on our own, separate from any combined effort of a group of states. So we may end up hit with a bigger increase.
We're going to definitely get hit next year because obviously people's consumption is down because of the pandemic. And that was the rule that when this gas tax went in several years ago, that the legislature has the ability to raise it on an annual basis, depending on need and consumption levels and things. So we'll see what happens. But there you go. If you want to follow Jack Chitterelli, you can follow his the next 3 days. I think it wraps up on Christmas Day. Well, I can't wait to find out what the 12th day of Christmas is for. For that.
Well, you know, shame on us, this business, that they can raise the tax on the gasoline if the Transportation Trust Fund, which is funded by that, comes in low. Well, they're always going to come in low because they rate it constantly. It's a good cash cow for politicians to set up programs that get them votes.
Yep.
So the governor, I don't know why he would be concerned at all about getting reelected as long as he doesn't turn Republican.
Right.
I mean, you're living in a state right now. I've said before, I know it's an exaggeration, but maybe not so much, that this governor could come out and say, I'm going to sell all your firstborn children to white slavers in Memphis, and we're going to take away everybody's income, close down businesses, all these crazy things. And he's still good, but he would say, okay, but remember, I'm the Democrat.
Yeah, right.
And still get away with it. You made, get back to the parodies now. You and your boys, a number of Christmases ago, made one of the best Christmas song parodies I've ever heard, there's ever made. And it's such a, almost said a bad word here, a doggone shame that you can't play it because of what technical, legal
license and copywriting laws and things like that. But you're referring to Holiday Man.
Holiday Man. Gosh, I wish we could do that because it was a beautiful satire on what's going on with Christmas and the rather sad state that the true Christmas stories have fallen into with this commercialism on steroids that goes on with the season.
Right.
I guess the season's a mixed bag. Now, if you've got little kids around, everything's beautiful. Everything's fine. And short of that, and maybe this will not be this way this year because people can't get together. But the great tradition is for families to get together, and all of a sudden, at some point, a fight breaks out. And they're not only decking the halls, you're decking Uncle Phil over here inside.
Right. What a mess.
I got to do this. At least I got to give mention to this. And there are people who will remember this. One of the great comic strips of all time was Pogo the Possum, written back in the 50s by a genius named Walt Kelly. It would be today you could compare Pogo more with Doomsbury. Berkeley Breathitt's cartoons, the Gary Larson cartoons. It was largely satire, but brilliantly done. It was a group of animals living in a swamp. And they were attuned to current figures. For example, there was Wiley Wildcat. His face was Senator Joseph McCarthy. And on and on. But I remember, and again, it's one of the beautiful childhood memories. Because in the day, when I was a young kid, we did not have television, you didn't have video games, and we only had, a couple of radio stations available. So we entertained ourselves with, the comic strip was a big thing. And we would discuss on Sunday, we had to discuss the morning funnies, the Cats and Jammer Kids, Popeye, and all of them. But one of the great pleasures was that sometimes you'd sleep out at night, you get a tent put up and you get a bunch of the kids around, and we would get the Pogo Possum strip out and almost play parts with that. But and things will stick with you. I still got Albert Alligator doing the Jabberwocky. I still will never forget that. I can do that. Even the dance he did in the comic strip. But I thought, okay, here we go. This was a classic in its day, and a lot of people still remember this because you still can find this online. It always pops up. And this was the parody, Deck Us All with Boston Charlie. Walla Walla Wash and Kalamazoo. Nora's freezing on the trolley. Swallow dollar cauliflower alligator. Don't we know our cake barrel? Lullaby, lullaboy, Louisville Lou. Hunky Dory's pup is jolly. Gagging on the wagon. Okay, but you get the point. And we would all sing things like that. You'd sing along with it, big sing-alongs. Another one that I don't remember that much of was the parody on Good King Wenceslas. Good King Sauerkraut looked down on his feet uneven. While his toes he counted out 9 and 10 and 11. There are certain things that go back to your, no matter how old you get, that go back, that make you laugh. It's just triggered by little things like that. And that was one of the ones that every time I think of that, I can break out in the laugh. So
you've been in radio. Nice. You've had a radio career over, six decades? I mean,
yes. I've had 63 years, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I would just love to have been on your crew back in the day when you were just like doing all these parodies before, back in the 60s and 70s when you're on all those different markets. You must have had a blast, coming up with this because you were one of the originators. People weren't doing that before you got on the air.
Yeah, I don't know if that will be kindly remembered or not.
Yeah.
But I was given credit for inventing, what do they call it, the morning zoo thing? Howard Stern did, with the cast of characters around.
Right.
Well, yeah. I always looked around and I saw all these other people. I'm sitting here doing all the cutting up and having the fun. But you've got the engineers, you've got the phone answerers, you've got all of these people, the news people and all. And they like to participate too. So I'd bring them all in and they get characters. Yeah. Uncle Floyd did that, really, with the camera crew.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And we did that with radio back in the old days.
So
the I wanted today, because of the season, I said, okay, we're going to do positive things and uplifting. And I didn't have much, and I searched my brain for uplifting things, and I find out that I've sort of crowded that out right now.
And
people will ask, I talked about entering my 90th year. People, for some reason, there is an association of age with wisdom. You're supposed to have learned something that other people didn't. It ain't true. And somebody comes up and says, well, you've lived this 90 years. What wisdom do you have to impart? Absolutely none, unless this is wisdom, by saying there ain't no wisdom. Nobody. We're riding a rock through space all together. Nobody knows where it's going, where it came from, with any certainty. So what can you know? You only know what somebody told you or what you read or what you heard on the radio or saw on the television.
Right.
And so this is, don't believe that. And just be very careful when somebody comes along. There was a notable Zen master one time who said something I thought was possibly profound. He said, when anybody comes along and tells you that they know what life is about, what is life about, what is the purpose of life, so that person is suffering from a serious mental disease.
Right.
And so you got to watch who you listen to there.
Yeah.
Getting to things that are current, I guess one of the big things now that, and there's so much that goes on that's so galling, it's very difficult to take it with this, you know, calmly. And that's this, what do they call it, the incentive or the relief packages now?
The stimulus relief, the COVID stimulus relief. This is just,
can you imagine, disgusting. They're talking about they're going to give $600, maybe.
Right.
Probably they'll want to tax it later, too.
Probably.
$600 to people. Yeah. Who are hurting, and people who are in dire straits. They're in very, very bad shape. They're in very big need. $600 nowadays, regardless of what they tell you about inflation, $600 doesn't go very far.
Yeah, it's two trips to the store.
But the total bailout is billions of dollars, or trillion, whatever.
Almost a trillion, Jim, almost a trillion.
Where's that money going? Most of it is going to millions. By the millions, it's going to people with connections.
Right. And the foreign countries, I think Ukraine and a couple of other foreign countries are in for hundreds of millions of dollars. This is just disgusting. What does that have to do with COVID relief? I mean, these restaurants, these businesses, Jim, people, individuals, they're just dying. We're just dying on the vine here. And you can only, like you said, only give $600. Come on.
Well, it's a good chance to pay off campaign debts. It's a good chance to pay people who supported you to get further support from people to sort of buy them. I had read a story that the, what is this young twit congresswoman?
AOC?
No, another one. Anyway, one of the others. His husband, and these are young people, and their job is Congress, which pays, what, $125,000 a year or something.
Yeah.
Her husband got millions out of the last bailout.
Right. Yeah.
Why? I have no idea, but it was very easy to do. We had these universities. What is it, Harvard, who has billions upon billions of dollars, in reserve sitting on top of?
Right.
And they ended up getting $6 million out of it. It's so disgusting. Yeah, and you get the idea that they want to keep the people in need because this keeps your thumb down on top of them and their activities and what they do.
And then back to these businesses for a second. Remember back in the spring, the last time this thing went around, they offered low cost loans or whatever, forgiveness loans. If you took the loan, the business took the loan and they kept their payrolls intact and they kept people employed as opposed to having to furlough them or lay them off or whatever. So these businesses were told that they can get these loans and that they'll get them paid off or forgiven back, in July or August when this thing died down. Well, there was no dying down. These businesses just kept getting further and further in the hole. And, some of them are just not coming back at all. Where's the relief for these people? I'm hearing, you got to read this bill because it's going to take at least 5 days just to sort through the stack of.
What do you mean read that bill? That bill was how many pages?
I know. You need at least
It's incredible. And they gave them 5 hours to read it, or 4 hours or something like that to read it. But in a sense, nobody read it.
No, how can any vote leader read the thing with, you're going to need a staff of five people plus yourself just to comb it over for 5 days, 5,000 pages or whatever it is, to really even understand it. And if they can't understand it and they're voting yes or whatever for it, what's that say? I mean, and we, as the lay people in this country, we're just being, you know, told what we're told, unless we're going to sit down and read the thing, you know, from beginning to end.
Fat chance.
Yeah.
Who can afford to buy a copy of it? That's
right. Absolutely. It's a couple of paper there. God. Yeah.
I had I mentioned something last week. It was pure notion that popped into my head. And then I heard a story this week that said that was prophetic. There is one story that it actually happened. And that was, I was musing on wondering when the courts, the circuit courts, the federal courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court had all turned down attempts by the Republicans to look into some of these, well, questionable matters regarding the election. And I said, what if the Supreme Court turned this down, not because of the merit of the case, but what if they said, okay, look, suppose these people are right and we have to overturn the election. What's that make us look like? Because all hell is going to break loose in the country. We already have the berserkers, the Democrat goon squads,
right?
Soros's people out there. They were all armed and ready to tear down the country if the election didn't go their way back in November. So they're still mobilized. They're still there. Now, I read a story. Again, this is a story. You read all kind of stuff now, that somebody in the employ of the Supreme Court in the building, or I guess they're meeting often digitally now, was somebody heard, because it was so loud, this person says that they heard the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court yelling at the other members of the court, who apparently wanted to hear the case, and he's yelling at them, saying, do you want to be the people who set this country on fire if we do that, if we overturn that? And said that, do you want to be the people who presided over the crisis by doing the right thing? Now, that was supposed to have been said. So there must have been some sentiment to hear this case. And the Supreme Court, if this story is true, if it's true, they had had the same notion that I had, that maybe they considered, and there's something to this. This is not without merit, that the greater good of the country was in denying this and pretending that none of this happened, because at least you do not have this total chaos, which, if it happened, is going to be so bad that, mind you, the military is going to have to be called in. There's no way to get around that.
Right.
This is going to be civil war, because at some point, even the other side is going to say enough and start fighting back.
Right.
You can't just have these radical bullies beating people and pushing and intimidating people, and nobody pushes back, which is going on pretty much right now.
Right.
While the people who push back are being disgraced by the media and shamed. But anyway, it was a thought. I don't know if it happened or not, but I can see it happening. Because I think if I were given that choice, that would be a thought that would come through my mind. Because as soon as we say, okay, we're going to put a hold on the election, all hell is going to break loose. There's going to be just total chaos in the country. But you got things going now that I was reading a story about one of the election officials, and this is going on all over the place, this spirit, anyway. One of the election officials in Detroit, or in Michigan, and this again was a story that's out there. I wasn't there, but the two of the electoral officials in charge of certifying the ballot in Detroit, two of them had voted against certifying it. You know, this is going back. So,
right.
And what happened is they had to be whisked into seclusion, hiding, because they were being threatened, and terrible things were being said, even in pulpits in churches. They were invoking, begging God to condemn them to hell, to kill them, and viciously, you know, I guess, like under the way their antecedents in the Inquisition did to people who didn't play the game. And it was a terrible situation. Now, the reason was they declared that these two people, by saying the way we want to wait and study this a little bit more because there are some inklings of maybe there were improprieties and we want to sort this out, which was reasonable. The rap on them was that is racist beyond words, beyond toleration, because it implies that in a city which the large population is minority, is black, that somehow some kind of crime could happen in that city. That this is a purposeful racist blot, just claiming that an irregularity could happen among people of that particular ethnic group. While in Chicago, people in that ethnic group are slaughtering each other. You know, look at the stories that come out every week, and nobody's noticing that. Right. So, I mean, that's just one example of what's going on here. People are becoming so balkanized.
Oh, absolutely.
This identity politics thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're so balkanized right now. Now, you get all of these groups that the politicians, in order to get votes, to corral them into little corrals that they can dominate, we have become so many of them, and each one is competing against the others to get the biggest share of the spoils. You know, comes the revolution. And so they're fighting even among themselves now for precedent. You got in Los Angeles, or in California, rather, the governor of California has to appoint a successor to co-president Harris.
Right.
You know, because she was a United States senator. Right. So the governor gets to appoint a replacement. Now there's a big fight because the president-elect wants to appoint a person who is Hispanic. The governor wants to appoint a person with Hispanic ancestry. I don't know how far back, could go back to the flood, but anyway. And so the other minorities are yelling about that's unfair, that we should have, our person should have it. I saw one story that, this is not related to that particularly, in which a person of South Sea ancestry was totally incensed in yelling that there's no South Sea member of the cabinet.
Mm.
And I guess there's no Eskimo either, you know, Aleut. So, I mean, we're getting into that kind of polarization now, which means that all of these groups now who supported this this progressive takeover are going to want to be tall hogs at the trough.
Right.
And they want to get the lion's share of the spoils and the lion's share of the revenge, which many of them are after, plainly and simply. And so this is a total breakdown. And I wonder here, you've got these accusations of foreign intrusion into the electoral process. We had 4 years of the Russians. The big bad wolf, the Russians, were the ones behind everything. Now we go into 4 years with the Chinese behind everything. Where are we? Next thing you'll know, they'll say West Virginia's tampering with it, so we're at their mercy. The whole thing is just so completely, totally out of hand.
Right.
Balkanization, in effect, could be the end of the country right now, the so-called identity politics. You'd pay no attention to reason. When the president announced the members of the cabinet and told how you're going to have all this diversity, not one line was about the competence of any of these people.
Right.
Or their ability. It was all about the color. Here we are. Okay. I was going to run down the hall real quick to pour cold water on myself.
Oh, that's fine.
I got one more. I'm sorry. You go ahead. Your turn.
I was going to say about the vaccines are out, getting around. I'm just a little bit disappointed here in New Jersey. I don't know if you heard, New Jersey missed a major deadline to have enough vaccine on hand to have the vaccines distributed to anybody in nursing homes or elder care facilities. That's just inexcusable. It's like, that's the only thing the state had to worry about was to get enough vaccine initially to get the most vulnerable people vaccinated. Like,
this might be, but this could end up being a blessing for people and a blessing for the governor if it turns out that there are some very bad reactions to this vaccine. And he will be a hero. He'll look into it.
Yeah.
He'll fall into the pit of roses there. Right. I don't know. I have so many mixed thoughts about that. Right now, my inclination is to not get it unless I'm forced to.
Right.
They'll have to hold me down kicking and screaming. but and not really because of any knowledge I have, but simply by the fact that, look, the president-elect has said that next year is going to be worse than this one with the virus.
Right.
And so you assume there's going to be more lockdowns, maybe even more stringent, some of which are asinine, silly, like in New York. They said that you cannot dine inside a restaurant. You could dine outside, but you can't go in to pee.
Right. That's.
I mean, that means that if you want to find out where to dine in New York, you walk around on the street and you look down alleys. And if you see some yellow snow, you follow the trail back
right.
to where people are seated.
I don't think we're going to see, Dan Alexander was telling me earlier, we don't think we're going to see much change in the rules with indoor dining. We still have limited indoor dining here in the state until like January 4th, which is when Pennsylvania is due to make changes into their ruling, which obviously they've outlawed all of, they've made that illegal. The biggest recommendation I can make to anybody this week, if you're looking for a last minute gift idea, or even if you're not, buy a gift certificate for your favorite restaurant for yourself, or give it as a gift this week, you know, $100, $200. I mean, at least these restaurants will be able to put that money on the books for December, and at least they'll give them a fighting chance to, you know, at least get something on the books. You can always redeem it at a later date. You know, $200-$300, that goes a long way. You know, and if everybody does that, it can certainly help your go-to place. That's what I've done.
That's good. I like that idea. We had the current president, Donald Trump, had issued some pardons. And that's interesting, the Democratic response to that.
Yeah.
He pardoned people who were often victims of questionable justice, like some of these military people, who in the spirit of a war did something that was a little out of touch with Miss Manners rules, which you have nowadays, and also people who were involved in this idiotic Russian thing. But there are people who had been convicted and some imprisoned for very questionable reasons. Now, again, this psychopath, Adam Schiff, the pathological liar, the California congressman who swore that he had proof of Russian collusion but never would share it with anybody, big lie. He is claiming now that those pardons are an abuse of power. Now, before the Clintons went out, the Clintons pardoned a whole bunch of people, largely based on how much money they gave the Clintons.
Oh, yeah, out the door. Yeah,
but that's okay. That's the way it should be, according to the radicals here. That's the way it should be. You should the pardons, presidential pardons, should be based on bribery, not on justice. And my golly, that's the way we're going to have. Oh, I've got to do one thing.
Sure.
I've got a great idea for the Republicans.
Okay.
Next time, presidential candidate. Don't take this too lightly. It'll work. The Republicans should nominate the next time as their candidate for presidency, the pillow guy.
The My Pillow guy?
Think about it. The My Pillow guy. This guy has all the qualifications. I mean, he is a narcissistic, histrionic personality. That's good. Obviously, very proud of himself.
American,
but for some reason, he gets all this. He commands attention. He has a commanding appearance.
Yeah.
And I think about it. And also, I think he got a toe in politics. Didn't he come out and speak one time from the White House during one of these virus?
Yes.
Presidential press conferences and all. Yep. So I'm sure he's thought of that.
It's a good point.
It's a nice thing about the presidency. Every politician sees himself. The South Jersey, the Cumberland County poultry inspector, I'm sure, sits in his office, brushes a few feathers away, and dreams of himself sitting in the Oval Office. So think about that.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much going on here.
Doug here on the Facebook feed had a comment. Doug wants to know, where can he get, looking for a Christmas gift, where can he get one of those grip hats? Why don't you have them for sale?
Oh, no. At one time, going back, I had this made for me by a friend. And it was made, it doesn't matter where it was made, made in one of the malls, but it used to have T-shirt, and I've got some T-shirts that go with it, too. The grip hat became kind of uniform. I've got pictures. One of my favorite pictures I have is me sitting there at the microphone with my grip hat on. And here is Governor Corzine right next to me. And I got the T-shirt that says "Get rid of incumbent politician." Right. And I hadn't thought about it. It's just what I wore to work that day. We were on TV at the time, and the governor, I would say, just gracious enough that he didn't mention it. But that is the station. Historically, going way back, used to come out with things like that, promotional items that were available to people. But by the time we got into the GRIP concept and talking about that, which is get rid of incumbent politicians, and it's a serious notion. The idea is that go to the polls every chance, vote against the incumbent. You'll be voting against some good people, but also some that aren't. But it doesn't make any difference. You're sending a message. You're firing a shot over their bow. You're showing the flag. We are here.
Yeah,
and we can do this to you anytime.
Yep.
At first, when I first came up with the idea, there were a couple of people, notably one very prominent state senator, who was scared because he figured, "Hey, God, that's a great idea; it'll work." And but it turned out the politician has it over you because the politician is there as a profession. Right. You are not. I am not in politics as a profession.
Yep.
Livelihood doesn't depend on holding an elected office.
Yep.
And so they will do anything to hang on to the office. I always likened it to having a tug of rope, one of these pull rope things with a Rottweiler. You'll never win. The Rottweiler will hang on and pull until there's nothing left of him but bones. You're going to get bored and give up very quickly. And this is exactly what happened. The Hands Across New Jersey, all of these other groups, just ended up. People had lives to live. Politician has a life to live, but it's all regaining office. It's keeping that job.
Yep.
And that then would be another advantage of GRIP.
Well, in place of term limits, which we probably won't see anytime soon, GRIP is the next best thing. Just kick them out on your own. Every chance you get, right?
Every chance you get. I got one more thing. Man, I'm still trying to cram the 50 pounds into the 20-pound bag. You hear this phrase again. I'm beginning to hear it more and more. We're all in this together.
Right.
That seems to be almost an obligatory comment at the end. I was watching even the Weather Channel and they had little uplifting pieces on and everybody then says, "We're all in this together."
No.
Think about that. Don't buy that. And I'll tell you why. You know where that came from?
No.
You ever see Terry Gilliam's movie, Brazil?
No, no.
You got to watch Brazil. It's great. There is a dysfunctional dystopia, which is like we're about to get into right now. It could very well be what our government is going to be, we're going to be living under. It's sort of a semi-1984 thing. Anyway, you have to watch the movie Brazil. Yeah. That was sort of the slogan everybody had. It was almost on their flag. We're all in this together. Now, what it is, a dystopian tyranny there. And one of the characters, Robert De Niro, played the head revolutionary against that. But this, "We're all in this together," was done. That was the slogan of the tyranny.
Yeah.
Because they had taken advantage of the fact that people like to be part of a community of something. You like to be a part of something, which is one of the reasons we have this breakdown, this Balkanization, you know, of the public by race. But this gave them the feeling that they were part of something. Like Big Brother made you think that the ultimate tyrant was your family. And you keep saying this stuff enough. But we're all in this together. Obviously, we're not all in this together because the elite ain't in it together.
No, we're not in this together.
And they're not about to get in it together with us. So be careful of that.
We all share the joy of Christmas. So we're going to have to wrap things up here. Yeah. You know, we got one more show. We're going to wrap things up next week, next Wednesday, December 30th, 10:30 here on Facebook Live. We're going to talk about, looking back at the year 2020 and looking ahead, maybe some resolutions from our audience. And, you know, until then, you know, Jim, happy birthday. Enjoy your Christmas. And,
I want to say one more thing. I hope I can do this quickly. Try to remember one way to sort of take some of the pressure off is remember and get into and take very seriously the original story, what this is about, what the holiday is based upon. Those who say, "Well, that's nothing but myth," that's okay, because it is a beautiful one. It's one of the greatest ones the world has ever had. And it really, if it's myth, if there's some areas of it that may not be true in your view, If you believe it, wonderful. You're way ahead of the game. But even if you don't, it is the absolute owner's handbook on how to live your life. And so think about that. The original Christmas story, and may God be with you and put this in your heart. My advice, if you want to take some of the pressure off, love somebody.
Yeah.
I think the need to love is greater than the need to be loved. So love somebody.
Absolutely. All right, Jim. Love you. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
And in spite of everything I've said, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.